Changes in the radio signals passing through the atmosphere of Mars were recorded. Is there life on Mars?
Oh, I don't know. But there's a rover there. Oh, rover, won't you come over? 720 WGN. 9 minutes after nine. Let's go to, I'm John Landecker, and I'm going to outer space. Rod Bylund's with us again. He is the Ad Astra magazine. If you want to go to space, this is the man to talk to. Isn't that right?
How you doing, John? You know, I realize I'm such a nerd, I actually know what that radio snippet was from.
Uh-huh.
Mariner 4, 1965.
Very good. Very good.
Do I get a gold star?
Absolutely. No, you get to be the next civilian on the launch to the space station.
Oh, my! In my dreams, yeah. You know, it's funny. We always talk about that as being the thing for the rich space tourists, right?
Yeah.
But now they're giving them away. That guy, Isaacson, bought four seats. He's taking one, and he gave one to a St. Jude's employee, a young woman who's a bone cancer survivor, and she's the first person to travel into space with a metal prosthetic in her leg, which is cool. And a young guy who's another employee there, and then whoever, I guess, wins the contest to raise funds for the hospital. I mean, this is just a big smile mission, isn't it?
Yes, as a matter of... Excuse me, I'm sorry. I actually entered the lottery for the
fight.
Yeah. Well,
awesome.
It's so. Well, come on. I mean, all you need to do is make a donation to St. Jude. I mean, like 10 or 20 bucks.
In fact, it's got to be like, you know, a bunch of zeros after the number. That's really put you in the running. I don't know.
Tell me about it. No, I mean, they claim. Well, you know, it's like they have to have rules because they're doing some sort of open drawing. I don't know, lottery is not the right word, or maybe it is. At any rate, I just did it for fun because I would love to go, but I'm sure.
Tell me now, if they said, okay, here's the capsule, the size of a large compact car inside, and here are your friends, and you know, here are all the single points of failure that can go wrong. There's the launch, you know, on a big bomb.
Yeah.
One way for the fuel to go out. And then there's, you know, passing the critical speed, what they call max Q, where things begin to shake apart, if they're going to shake apart. And here's how to abort if you think something's going wrong, so you'll probably be okay. And then you're in space where, you know, everything in that environment hates you. And then there's four parachutes to come home. Are you still willing to go?
Yes.
Okay, but, just asking.
But
I
love
think about it.
I love the expression where everything in that environment hates you.
It's true.
It's true.
It popped into my head when I was writing Space 2.0, and I started a chapter by saying space hates people, and it kind of caught on a little bit, you know. But then a friend of mine, a guy named Frank White, who wrote a book called The Overview Effect years ago, said, "Yes, but people love space." And I thought,
"Yeah, they do."
A marketing phrase. Thank you.
Well, you know. Without getting too personal, I mean, I'm not of the age group that probably qualifies. I qualify for a vaccine, but I don't qualify to go to outer space. Let me just put it that way.
I'm just a few months off the vaccine age, and I'm so pissed off.
Like, you know,
9 months I would have had it, but no, I'm going to wait till April, I'm sure.
Well, but you know what I'm saying, though. I mean, it's like we've grown up. With this idea of, well, I have anyway. I mean, and you've worked on science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, it's fascinating. It's magnetic. It's like, yeah, I want to try it. I know that there's all these things that could go wrong. I mean, and they have gone wrong in the past. But as time marches on, facets are improved. You know,
well,
I mean,
okay, there's two ways to look at this. John Glenn was, I think, either 78 or 82 when he flew the second time the shuttle.
Very good.
You know,
yes.
That looks good for guys like you and me.
Right.
On the other hand, you look at science fiction, whether it's The Expanse or Star Trek or the Star Wars franchise or whatever, and it's like the young and the restless. You know, they're young, they're beautiful, they're 26,
oh, I know.
They're the very best we've got, and it's like,
yes.
Really? somebody learns the best you can get by the time they're 20. Not going up against the 26-year-olds out there. There's some really smart ones. A lot of them work at places like JPL, but really?
They graduated from the Starfleet Academy. What are you talking about?
Well, there you go. Okay. I missed that boat, I think.
Well, let's get back to the rover. Let's get back to reality, so to speak. What's happening? Tell us, where are we? Where's the rover? What's going on?
So Perseverance, nicknamed Percy.
Yes.
People don't like that nickname. I think it's cute. Landed a couple days ago, and it was a big moment for those of us who follow these things. I think it was a big moment for everybody. They got JPL direct feed on their stream got between 1.5 and 2 million hits. And then if you add everything else together, I was on another stream for an organization called Explore Mars, and Planetary Society had one, and there's NASA TV and all these other things. Many tens of millions of people were watching this because even though we've done it before, we've had a number of rovers on Mars. This is the only the second one to arrive with this wacko-looking system called Skycrane, where it goes plumbing into the atmosphere at 12,000 miles an hour, and it doesn't go into orbit like they did in the old days with our first landers, the Vikings. It shot out of Earth with a rocket, like a bullet out of a hunting rifle, traverses the millions of miles between Earth and Mars because it's on a curving trajectory, so it's longer, and then goes right in the atmosphere. There's no messing around. It goes right in. Heat shield hits the atmosphere. This atmosphere is about 1/100th that of Earth, so it's so thin the parachutes aren't good enough to slow it down for landing, but there's enough of it that it heats the thing up, so it's like the worst of both worlds, you know. So it goes in, heat shield's doing its thing. Meanwhile, the spacecraft, and mind you, it's about 12 minutes for a one-way radio signal to reach from Earth to Mars and another 12 minutes to come back. So it's on autopilot. It's doing this all by itself. It's adjusting. It's looking down and saying, okay, I know where I got to go. It's got little gas jets firing on it. So it's kind of gliding on the heat shield. Then it comes down lower, pops a parachute at supersonic speeds, which is really hard to do because they often shred. As one engineer told me, he said, parachutes are like wild animals. You know, you do all this computer modeling, you do all this theorizing, you build it, you test it, and they rip to shreds. So that's always a little bit of a nail biter. Then the heat shield drops away, and finally, when it gets to a certain altitude, low enough, the rover drops free of this capsule-shaped cone that it's riding in called the aeroshell, and goes down with it. The rover's got a backpack on it with rocket engines that are firing now to continue slowing it down. And that goes down to about 70 feet, and then it throttles up, so it just hovers there for a second. And then the rover is lowered down on nylon tethers. It's winched down because they don't want the rocket engines to get too close to the surface and stir up a bunch of pebbles and damage the rover. And the second the computers detect that the rover's wheels touch the ground, they cut the tethers, we hope all of them, and the backpack flies off to go crash land a couple miles away. Mind you, all this is done with a computer running on Linux, which is open source, very cool. A computer with a processor that you would have had in your Macintosh G3 back in 1997.
Wow.
Amazing. And that's what you call elegant programming. And the reason they do that is because they have to buy chips that are militarized, that are shielded against radiation.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And they're like $400,000. And they're old, but they work. So if it's just got basic things to do, which is, you know, all this is doing is running a spacecraft, they're really good at it. So that's why they use that older technology.
You know,
so you know you ain't running Windows on that thing. And
well, you know,
it was successful.
No, Rod, you can tell that you have written science fiction, too, because your description... Wait, no, seriously. Your audio... what you just went through describing what this thing is doing... I mean, I had a perfect picture, and I'll bet everybody else who heard it did too, had a perfect picture in my mind of what was going on. Either because we've seen mock-ups of this type of thing in special effects or actual plots in quote-unquote, you know, sci-fi TV shows. And I mean, the way you described it, I was there. I mean, you know, I can see these parachutes opening and shredding, and then this thing. I mean, we'll be back. We'll do more of this. We are going to outer space again. when we come back on 720 WGN.
It's David Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender. Today, meet Mark, married, three kids, loaded with debt, living in a $350,000 home, income 130 G's a year. Mark could never pay off the 38th grand he was carrying on his credit cards and get his scores over 680, so he called Team Hochberg for a free consultation. We helped Mark pay off his credit card debt and reduced his payments over $900 a month. Let's review. Before calling, Mark was on the credit card treadmill. After calling Team Hochberg, Mark paid off all his debt with a cash-out refinance and saved over $10,000 a year. Team Hochberg has helped thousands of WGN listeners, like we helped Mark, pay off debt, enhance their credit, and reduce their monthly payments. But we can't help if you don't call 855-56-DAVID or visit 56david.com. Tune into Home Sweet Home Chicago, hosted by me, Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. Homeside Financial, Legal Housing Lender, and unless 112-4061.
With PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Mike Campbell here, serial entrepreneur with words from another happy payroll customer.
My husband and I started a business together, and I had no idea where to start when it came to payroll. And a friend of mine recommended Patriot, and I have not looked back since. It was extremely user-friendly. I was actually able to understand it and run everything extremely well. And anytime I've had a question, they have been so quick to answer and help me. I definitely recommend it to anyone who is looking for a payroll software that is easy to use, user-friendly, and really offers everything that you need when it comes to something that's beneficial for your business.
Visit us at PatriotSoftware.com. Use promo code RADIO and get 2 months of payroll free. That's PatriotSoftware.com.
PatriotSoftware.com. Accounting and payroll. Keep your time and money.
Tuesday, even after legalization, the black market for weed is still smoking.
We run out of places to put it.
But is local law enforcement going too far? WGN-TV investigates Tuesday at 9.
Now at Menards, save big money on your next project with 11% off everything. Give your home a new look with Tarkett laminate flooring. Tarkett combines design and performance to provide you the looks you love. Durable and water-resistant Aquafloor Plus laminate is $199 a square foot after 11% off. Get 11% off everything now at Menards. Good through February 27th. Savings are a mail-in rebate. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
We have just discovered an important note from space. The Martians plan to throw a dance for all the human race.
Yeah, that's right. Getting ready for a big dance up there on Mars. Going to be doing the Martian hop. 720 WGN, I'm John Landecker, and we're having a great conversation with Rod Pyle, who's the editor-in-chief of Ad Astra, and we're talking about the rover landing on Mars. And I understand that for the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, because you know way more than I'll ever even think I know, there's a microphone on the outside of the lander, or the rover. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there's two. There was one that was supposed to record the thing entering and landing.
Yeah.
And that one failed for some reason, although I don't think it failed mechanically. There was some kind of a software error. But there's also one on the rover, and they got their first sounds back from that over the weekend and played them at a press conference today. And it sounded like I can do it for you.
Okay. I have it.
Oh, you have it? Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, we're supposed to be hearing the rover from Mars, and it's filtered. I'm serious. It's filtered, yeah. Okay, right? The same sequence, not filtered. So first we hear what Mars sounds like, and there's a little wind,
a
puff of wind, and then you hear the same thing with the hum of the rover. This is from NASA. This isn't some sort of comedy, goofy record. Here we go. There you go. Isn't that exciting? It's but that's it. Well, honestly, I mean, that is sort of cool. I mean, come on.
It is cool. And if somebody was going to, you know, somebody will call into a show tonight later on at some station and say, that's fake. Honestly, between you and me, you could do that better by blowing on your microphone, right?
Well, yeah, but that wouldn't be from Mars.
It wouldn't be from Mars. Now, they did send microphones before that didn't work. And then they did get sound once. Now, this is how JPL and NASA people think. They had a spacecraft up there with a seismometer, and they were able to take the vibrations of the wind blowing past the spacecraft and translate them into sound.
Right. So
you have heard the wind blow before, but never an actual recording of it. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. And the reason there isn't much to it is because the air is so thin, if you were standing there holding a piece of paper, it would barely move.
Well, and that's the idea, is the microphone is actually on the outside of the rover. It's like sticking my microphone outside the window. And somebody would say, oh, that's fake. Well, you know, what would not be fake? Giant roars of monsters coming at us and people with ray guns? I mean, that's what's there, man. I mean, it's not like, you know, a hotbed of activity up there.
Don't you wish, though, you could have been somewhere in the back room, Mission Control, with a tape that you clipped in that went,
I was thinking about that all day. I was thinking about exactly the same thing all day. We're about ready to hear from the microphone. Let's turn on what's happening. Hello, this is Jimmy Hoffa. You know, I mean...
Exactly. My blue suede shoes. It was one of the Apollo 11 guys, I think it was Mike Collins, who was talking to Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin at one point. He said, you know, what we really ought to do, and they said, what? So we get to the moon, the first thing you guys ought to say when you land the lunar module is, oh my God, do you see that? And then cut off the mic. But they didn't do it.
Well,
they were good.
Good, yeah. Hello. Yeah, but then, of course, everybody would be doing the whole War of the Worlds, it's a fake thing, so... You know, in fact, there are plenty of people who still think there are still plenty. I don't know if they're still around, but there are some who thought that the moon landing was staged somewhere in Hollywood.
Oh, they are still there. In fact,
are they?
A couple of years ago, you know, the supposed Stanley Kubrick thing hit YouTube again, and it's him supposedly doing a deathbed confession, and he looks like Howard Hughes in his last years, and I filmed the whole thing and all that. The problem is, you know, I used I did a lot of late night radio, and I do coast to coast and shows like that.
Right. Yeah.
And everything's fine till the call ins, and then of course people are going to ask if they want to know, and this fascinates people, understandably. And I used to go in this long explanation about, well, you know, go to the archive and look at the thousands of photos and look at the hundreds of thousands of feet of audio, listen to the audio tapes and touch the rockets and talk to the astronauts and then tell me what you think. I have a much simpler explanation now, which is, the Soviet Union was tracking everything they did. They were listening. They knew where those signals were coming from. And don't you think they would have ratted us out in about 30 seconds if it was a fake?
Getting back to the current situation, now, we have the rover on Mars. But didn't we have a conversation a few weeks ago about the rest? It's turning into a parking lot up there?
Not yet.
But I mean, other countries are sending. What are we talking about?
Well, so we got a bunch of things in orbit. We got about 9 or 10 spacecraft in orbit. So there's the U.S., Europe has one, India has one. Now the United Arab Emirates has sent one that just arrived on February 9th. And the Chinese have a big, heavy, like a 12,000-pound orbiter lander combo. That's a lot like the U.S. Viking from the 1970s that just reached orbit on the 10th. So that rover lander combo is going to attempt to set down sometime in April or May.
But they're all headed towards Mars.
Yeah, but you got a planet that's got almost as much surface area as the dry land mass of Earth, so they won't be running into each other.
Well, no, I didn't mean that they would be running into each other. I just thought it was sort of unique that there's this planet Mars, and if you look up, the, you know, circling around in the atmosphere are international representatives from the planet Earth, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So what is the goal of the rover? What is their bottom line? What is their end game?
The bottom line, so let me back up one rover. So two rovers. So the bottom line of the Mars exploration rover Spirit and Opportunity in the mid-2000s was to try and see if there was water there. We were pretty sure there was, because we spotted some stuff that looked like it was the result of water weathering with Perseverance and Pathfinder back in the 1997 era. Then the next two went looking for water. Then Curiosity landed in a big crater called Gale Crater to look to see if the soil there was habitable ever, because it looked to be an ancient lake about 3.5 billion years ago. So it took a bunch of samples and said, yeah, this looks like weathered or hydrated soil. So yes, something could have lived here. It was kind of, compared to now, it was very balmy. It wasn't about the Bahamas, but it was warmer. And there's liquid water on the surface, so it had a thicker atmosphere. Cool. So this one is the first astrobiology mission on Mars, anywhere in the solar system, since the Vikings in the 1970s. They had a very basic set of life science experiments, four of them, and we're pretty sure that they didn't find anything, although there was one weird result that people still talk about. This one has got a coring drill. It's going to core up material from up to 6 or 7 inches below the surface, look at it, and say, okay, these are either ancient fossils with organic biosignatures or they're not. And then it's going to take those samples, up to 30 of them, seal them in little titanium tubes, and toss them over its shoulder on the way across its traverse across Mars. And then in about 6 years, we're supposed to send another mission with the Europeans to go pick them up and bring them back.
Wow. Well, we're running out of time.
Get out of here.
Yep. Well, you know, time marches on, and we're out of it. Thanks a lot again for being with us, Rod. Always great to talk to you. Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astro.